So I'm going to give you the employer's perspective on the future of work, which I think is very, very important because in many ways, the employers define the future of work. They are either going to be a part of making it good or not making it good. And the way I'm going to do this is I'm going to tell you a story that starts with economics, because I know some of you are economists and some of you are from that background, talk about technology, and then the end is about people. And what I do for a living, as Yanine knows, is talk to large organizations, mostly human resources leaders, about their people challenges. So I see the issues of the future of work very pragmatically every single day. And I hear the same questions over and over and over again. Virtually every company is suffering from the same problems. Our employees are burned out. We need to reskill people. We don't have enough people. We can't hire enough people. We don't know how to make pay fair in a time of inflation. We need better leaders. And at the same time, we're moving into a new business because the technology has changed so fast that the business we're in may not be around 5 years from now. So how do we get all of these people from here to there? And essentially, most recently, the issue is we have so many jobs, we can't hire them. And if you listen to what Linda just said, it's just going to get worse because we're not having enough children in most parts of the world, certainly in developed countries. We have, skills needs and the issue of constantly increasing productivity, well-being, and growth. So let me talk about all of these topics, believe it or not, in 20 minutes. I will get through this. And I'm going to focus on five things. I want to talk about how jobs and organizations are changing, something that is actually very easy to understand. Last week, by the way, I was in Stockholm. I met with the CHRO of Spotify and learned, I've spent a lot of time with them. If you looked at Spotify as a company, you would not recognize it as another company because of the way they operate and because of the jobs they have. We're going to talk about skills. I'm going to talk a little bit about hybrid work. I want to talk about diversity, which is a defining factor of the future of work. And then I want to talk about this issue of well-being and productivity. Now, where is all this transformation coming from? Why are all of these things happening? I think if you go back 25 years, around the time I got into HR, when Netscape was invented, if anybody remembers that, we were not prepared for the digital revolution. And for 10 years, companies essentially hired and skilled and retrained people to build digital tools and services to sell and reach customers through digital services and products. And that was a big change enough. That was disruptive enough to the economy. And what happened is most of that digital transformation didn't just transform what we sell and how we sell it, it transformed how we operate. And companies began to realize we need to move faster. We need to move into small teams. We need to do things in an iterative way. We have to move people around more inside of the company. And all of that was taking place, and most of the companies I talked to told me we have a 3 to 5 year digital transformation agenda. And then we had the pandemic, and we went from 3 to 5 years to 3 to 5 months, or maybe 3 to 5 weeks. And everybody went home, and companies realized, wow, not only is this technology more powerful than we thought it was, but now we really understand it. And so the pandemic, in some ways, for all of the pain and agony and disruption that it caused, taught organizations that they can use technology in far more transformational ways than they realized before, resulting in where we are today, where almost every company is moving into an adjacent industry. Now, I won't spend a lot of time on that fourth box, but if you look at what Amazon is doing, buying healthcare providers, telecommunications companies getting into media, healthcare providers getting into informatics, automobile companies getting into batteries and power systems, every company, including banks, every company is getting into some adjacent industry, and their workers, their employees, their workforce has to move along with them. They're becoming flatter. And so one of the things that's happened in the future of work is maybe you won't have a boss. Maybe you'll have multiple bosses. I had this interesting experience when I went to work for Deloitte. I joined Deloitte as an acquired company, and my first few weeks at Deloitte, I realized I don't have a boss. I have to figure out what to do all day. And that's the way consulting firms work. Well, most companies today are actually organized in a matrix or a network. 75 to 80% of companies say that. So when you do that, your skills, your reputation, your ability to work with others, your collaboration capabilities, your human skills define your value to the company. So all of a sudden, every individual is being evaluated a different way. I mean, in the old days, you know, when you were hired, who hired you, sponsored you through the organization, and you had a lot of political capital. That's all going away too. So that's defining differences in the world of work that have come from this technology revolution. Now, the question that Linda asked is a really good one. Is technology making work harder or easier? Is it eliminating work or creating work? And the research that I've concluded, and I think it's pretty clear if you think about it, is every technological revolution, including the most recent one, creates better jobs. I worked at IBM in 1979, when we had a steno pool, if you ever know what that was. There were women typing paper on typewriters, and you would go in there and you'd give them your paper, they would type it up, and you'd take it back to your desk. All of those people lost their jobs. But they didn't go out of work. They became executive assistants, they became customer service agents, they had better jobs as a result of that because a machine could do that work. And so I went back and just out of curiosity, I looked at wages in the United States over the last 30 years against inflation, and you can see what's happened is that even though wage growth hasn't been as much as we'd like, on average, measured by wages, work has gotten better. And so the whole story about technology is a positive one, if you can keep up, which leaves me to number two, this issue of skills. Now, I'm a big fan of the educational institutions. I've had my fill. I have three master's degrees. I've had a lot of education, but the most important learning I've had has been on the job. And corporations spend $350 billion a year today on education. And that education is pragmatic. It's designed to teach people how to do their jobs better, and it's very, very valuable. And right now, in corporations, this is one of the biggest problems they had. Just this week, we met with some of the leaders at ASML, one of the most interesting companies you have in this country, and they're going to double their workforce in the next 3 years, double it in the next 3 years. And the thing they're the most worried about is how are we going to take all of these new employees and upskill them on our company, what we do here and how we do it, and our culture. And so we're helping them figure out how to build an internal corporate university to do that. And this is going on all over the world. Companies are building academies. Let me go back and here it is. Basically, university-like programs inside of their companies to upskill and educate and train professionals or hourly workers or any wage workers. And I think this is a really important initiative that we have to support. The problem is, of course, corporations can't do everything. And as Linda mentioned, if you're an hourly worker, if you're a craft worker, if you're a frontline worker, if you're a truck driver or a bus driver, or you're in a relatively low-paying job, maybe there isn't a program to get you to turn into a data scientist or a software engineer or a senior salesperson. So what we do instead is we create something we call a career pathway. And this is another invention that's been really rolling around the world. And this is companies, and this is a significant trend, companies like Walmart, AT&T, Amazon, healthcare companies, who say to their employees, you're doing a great job for us. Maybe you're making $10 an hour, you're driving a car, or you're an ambulance driver, or you're doing something relatively tactical. We want you to stay with us, and we're going to teach you how to become a registered nurse or a certified X-ray technician, and we will pay for your education, and we will partner with a local educational institution, and we will move you there because it's in our best interest as an employer to do this. And this is a massive trend that I think is a good way to tie the educational industry and the corporate industries together into a solution that all industries need. So this is another thing that's going that I think will define the future of work. Third topic is this whole idea of work at home and hybrid work. And I always have to laugh about this. I live in San Francisco, in the San Francisco Bay Area. which is a pretty intense place to work. If you've ever been in Silicon Valley, people work 70, 80 hours a week. There's just never, everything is highly competitive. Every company is being disrupted by somebody right next door. People are jumping around from company to company all the time. And we used to have this term called work at home, W-A-H. Have you ever seen W-A-H on somebody's email? Work at home used to mean goofing off, not doing anything. Well, now we know work at home works. You can work at home. We can create a flexible workplace for you. And so companies have basically come to the conclusion that maybe we should institutionalize this. Maybe we won't go back to the old way of working. Maybe that old Elon Musk attitude of sending everybody back in the office, maybe that isn't such a good idea. Because employees actually do like working in their own way, in their own style. And that, to me, is also the future of work. And we have to accept that. One of the things that happens, however, when people work remotely is they actually can change jobs a lot easier. One of the reasons, in the United States at least, a third of Americans change jobs in 1 year, that is the highest voluntary turnover rate ever in the United States, is because they can change jobs by changing email addresses. They don't have to go to a new office or move, or so careers have changed. And one of the things that is also defining for organizations is what does a career look like in a 100-year life in an organization that has to transform itself every couple of decades where people are doing multiple jobs at the same time. So we have to redefine careers. Now, when I was talking to Yanine last night about what's going on at Rabobank, one of the ways that companies are fixing this is they're creating internal mobility, internal career growth, horizontal careers that are very, very powerful and very, very different than we have in the past. Microsoft, for example, has a new policy for all of the up and coming high potential, highly ambitious young workers, and they say to them, you're not going to get promoted for a good 5 to 10 years here, but we expect you to take multiple jobs and multiple divisions of Microsoft across the company before you get promoted. And that's a defining factor for employers in the future of work too, which, by the way, is one of the best ways you build your skills as a professional is to do new things. The fourth point is diversity. Now, diversity, for those of you who work in the corporate world, is a big topic. And usually it gets delegated to HR. And there's some poor person with a job title, head of diversity, that's trying to get every manager in the company to be more diverse, more inclusive, more fair, and it's a really difficult job. And of course, if we really do have this talent constraints like we do from the demographics, and we're doing business around the world, and operating in multiple countries, we have to be a diverse company to grow. And that is becoming a defining role in the future of work too. You know, in the United States, it's funny, I work with a lot of software companies. Workday, which is one of the largest HR systems, now has 14 definitions of gender in the HR system. That's how diverse the world has become. And organizations have to adopt this, they have to understand it, and they have to realize that every single study that has been done on diversity shows that diverse teams, diverse companies, diverse boards always outperform non-diverse groups. Always. There must have been hundreds of studies on this. And lots of reasons, lots of psychological reasons for this. One of the reasons, by the way, that this is such a powerful tool is it creates psychological safety. If you know that somebody of another race or another gender or another age will succeed in the company, then you feel more comfortable adding more value yourself because you will be respected in the company too. So this is a massive issue. Unfortunately, the challenge I think we have is that companies are still not very good at it. And when you actually look at the diversity in organizations that we've studied, only about 12% of the companies we looked at are truly diverse at their core. And they tend to be organizations that are diverse for survival reasons, because they have to be diverse. So let me just say that diversity is part of the future of work, and we all have to work on immigration policies and diversity standards to turn this into reality in organizations. The final point I'll make, I told you I was going to get through all this, but you guys didn't believe me. The final point I want to make is this issue of well-being. Now, once again, if you look back maybe 10 years ago, long before the pandemic, when we were in the middle of the digital revolution, this weird idea that I read about in California was called unlimited vacation. Do you have unlimited vacation in the Netherlands? Okay, well, a lot of the companies I work with have unlimited vacation. And you know what that means? You don't take any vacation. You can take it, but we're too busy because we've got too much for you to do. And so all of these benefits got piled on and piled on and piled on, and the benefits department just kept throwing more things at people, even though they were working harder and harder and harder. And what we learned during the pandemic was people are burned out. You heard the statistics in the UK. We've seen the statistics all over the world. Somewhere around 70 to 80% of workers are saying to their companies, I can't do any more. I'm done. I have children at home. I've been dealing with the pandemic. I have my own issues in my own life. I can't do any more for you. And now that we have this economic slowdown and the stock market has gone through a correction and high interest rates and inflation, the CEOs are saying, we need more productivity. So I don't care how hard you've worked, we're gonna just dial it up a little bit more, right? Isn't that what's going on in most companies today? That will not work. We know that. Starbucks, for example, which is one of the best employers in the United States, has one of the highest turnover rates they've ever experienced. They're suffering from unions, and they've basically gone back and they've said, we have to redesign Starbucks because the company we designed does not work for employees. To give you one funny story about Starbucks, here's why it's so hard to work at Starbucks. Because of all of the different flavors of coffee they've created at Starbucks, there are 170,000 permutations of coffee you can buy at Starbucks. 170,000. So the average barista at Starbucks has to look at you and hear what you have to order and think of 170,000 things they have to do to serve that order. Obviously, that's a very, very hard job. So what's going on next as part of the future of work is really reinventing jobs around people. Because what automation does, as Linda mentioned, is it eliminates a lot of the routine work. It eliminates a lot of the boring work. It eliminates a lot of the work that people get tired of doing and allows us to redefine and rebuild companies around their people. And once again, I think we have to get executives involved. And I know a lot of you are business executives. You need to be a part of this. You can't just go to the HR department and say, give these people a bunch of benefits and let's see if they can become more productive. We have to go back and look at work and make sure that we are doing things in the optimal way for employees, which will in turn make it valuable for customers. By the way, one of the things that comes out of a lot of this research about the future of work is, and I wrote a book on this too, is that the companies that perform the best under these economic changes, like the ones we're going through now, have the happiest employees. That is not an accident. It isn't because the companies are successful that they have the happy employees. It's because they've taken care of the employees that they're more adaptable, they're more resilient, and they're more innovative, and they generate more profit. And that, to me, is another big focus of the future of work, is reinvesting in people and thinking about organizations in the context of people. So that's the story of the future of work from the employer standpoint. Thank you, Janine, for inviting me.
Thank you.